Jeff, please, Jeff. COO, can you mute your mic?
I'm muted. My message. Mute.
Switch off. Okay. No, I'm saying on the last, on the other slide, there were students are still being assessed on the qualifying criteria before 2018. I think there's something fundamentally wrong with that, because the introduction of this policy of free education for the working class and the poor should be able to cover everybody, with effect from the date that it was announced, and it should not discriminate against those who were in the system before. You know, it's supposed to be universal at the point of introduction. I think there's something wrong there with the policy, which still treats others on a system that was applicable before 2018. It's like when apartheid came to an end, it was abolished, and you see those who were before apartheid would still be considered in terms of the rule that was applicable before. It's something which is not right, and I think it's something that the department must look at, because it can only embarrass our government that there are those who are still being treated as if they are still living pre-2018. So that is just for that. But you know, I'm looking at the slide here by the administrator of an VET on the students who are still having issues with NSFAS. I don't know what slide number is that. It says key action by administrator institutional finances continuing. There's 670 students who are still having issues with their accounts. Some of them, the accounts were created, but the registration data was only uploaded in July. And then there's about 200 of them on the N+2 rule. And there's about 14 who did not sign the contract. There's about 178 students who were affected by the closure projects for 2017-2019. And then there are other issues for funded students, 834 students registered for semester one, and then 257 students with no banking details. Now when I look at the information from NSFAS and this information, it doesn't seem to tally. Because we are talking about 800 students who were not successful because of N+2, I think, and here it's more than that. So I think maybe we would ask that you compare this information so that it's consistent. The reason why we ask NSFAS to come and be part of this engagement is because we've been receiving a lot of complaints lately. My email has been inundated with complaints by the students from VET complaining about their funding just been cut off by NSFAS. Lots and lots of them. And I think it's a matter that needs to be attended. This issue of N+2, I think we have to get deeper into it when we look at it, because there's one student who complained to myself. I forwarded that complaint to the administrator. That student was able to demonstrate to myself that he was only registered for 1 year at UNISA. And I think what happened after registering for 1 year, he left the system because he said he wanted to go and work, supplement his income because he had a problem at home and he could not qualify for NSFAS. And on the record of the UNISA, they still treated him as being registered, although he exited the system at some point. And he can prove that I did not register, I did not even apply. So it's possible that this situation can apply to many other students, where when you check their records, you may get information that they were registered, but whilst in actual fact they had not yet registered. So it's taking a lot of students out of the system because of information that might not be correct. So I think every case must just be treated differently on its merit. The student must be able to make representation if the student qualifies and then be treated as such. Because we're going to lose a lot of students out of the system because of incorrect information. That's just for that. But I've noted Honorable Lisiye, I've noted Honorable Mukachwa, I've noted Dr. Tembe Kwayo, and I think we must take this opportunity to welcome Honorable Tembe Kwayo to our portfolio committee from the EFF. She's replacing Honorable Kiesi from the portfolio committee, who was a very active member of our portfolio committee. Welcome, Honorable Tembe Kwayo. I've got Honorable Mananiso, I've got Honorable Sibiya, and lastly, I've got Honorable Boshoff. So before I go to all of you honorable members, I just want to say something, and I'm still going to comment on the presentation by the administrator of VHC. We have received this anonymous issues, and I ask that the administrator should take us on board in as far as those issues are concerned, those allegations. And I think the administrator was a bit more general, because these allegations are specific. For instance, I'm just going to make one example. There are many. I'm just making one example on the first one. The first one is on the purchase of student residence. And the allegation is that this process was stopped by the previous chairperson of the finance committee because there was a suspicion that certain council members were lined up to receive some kickbacks with an amount that is mentioned to the tune of 40 million. And those things, the chairperson of the finance committee wanted to be investigated. And then when the administrator was appointed, he instructed that the process must proceed. But then the actual issue which I thought the administrator was going to respond to is that at the time when that inspection was made, this tender had lapsed. So the validity period of the tender had expired. So I thought that the administrator will say, we then started the process, extended the validity period, and then continued with the negotiations and so forth, because the other allegation is that the appointment letter that was issued to the person had expired, and that person in fact had regarded the tender as fallen off, the deal has fallen off, and the owner of that building was at an advanced stage of selling that building. Now, the responses that we get is almost like high level. It does not get into the details of what the allegations are, which is what we are interested to find out. For instance, let me make a second example. There is an implementation of the SNG forensic report and the report of the assessor. Now, this whistleblower says there's over 20 people who were implicated in the SNG report. Now, there were various allegations. There were so-called sex for jobs. There were people appointed without following proper process. There were unqualified people. There was a lot of nepotism and so forth. So there were about 20 of them. None of those people, according to this whistleblower, have been charged, have been taken through the DC processes and so forth. And the response is, okay, it goes on to say there's also 5 people who are implicated in a procurement irregularities. And of the 5 people, only 2 have been charged and have been taken through the DC process. They are questioning why the selective application of the DC process. So these things might be irritating to the administrator, Professor Rensberg, but we require answers to these questions, to these allegations. To say, is it true that over 20 people who were implicated have not been taken through the DC processes? So you must be able to demonstrate that, no, we're implementing, this is what we have done, and all of that, and all of that. So the high-level treatment of this thing is something that concerns me a little bit. I can go on and explain how sufficient answers have not been provided. But I've just cited those 2 examples, which I think we still need to get deeper into the issues at the particular point. But I don't want to take comments and questions from the members. I just thought that I must highlight the fact that on that score, I don't think there has been sufficient justice made to the issues that have been raised with us. But let me take this opportunity and invite Honorable Lisier to engage with the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let's also welcome all presentations from the administrators of both the VUT and MSFAS, leadership of Nehao and Deng, and obviously the suspended student representative whose term is expired. Chairperson, maybe let me start where you ended. I thought the presentation would have a little bit from the administrator of of VUT would have a little bit of need to respond direct questions and not overall high level, because I thought we asked specific questions. And also join you before me to welcome Dr. Tembekwayo to the study group. Welcome, Dodish. We hope that you will keep the fires burning like Fighter Kiet was doing. The first one, Chairperson, that I want to speak to is this issue of students. You see, with how the administrator, it's a page we can't refer to page numbers because the presentation does not have page numbers. But if you go to a slide that speaks to key action by the administrator, institutional finances continues. I think that's why they speak about the 670 students there, and that is where I would like to speak to start. If we are to follow how they are responding to us, Chabazet, it will be February next year, and we'll still not have answers because the presentation doesn't commit to when. I mean, they are just saying priority attention. I can confirm now that these students have not been paid now for 2 months. So what is priority attention there? So when students have not received their allowances for 2 months at least, these ones that we know, that have complained to yourself, myself, and other portfolio committee members. Chairperson, I'm not happy with how the administrator of VUT is responding to this thing. It says 278 students. Their accounts were not created because their data, registration data, was only uploaded by VUT on the 21st of July this year, when these kids registered in February. So 5 months later, it's only then that VUT uploads registration data of this student. So it's not necessarily the fault of this student, as per what the VUT presentation says. Now, the administrator is not telling us who in the institution is held accountable for this mistake. Because this is not the first time with NSFAS, the institution and student issues. So I'm sure they have a deadline already. By March, so-and-so, by April, as I think Dr. Carlson was saying, by April, we want all registration data from institutions on this day in April. But this thing did not happen. Who is to be held accountable from the institution side? Because the institution, clearly somebody was there at NSFAS offices, did not do their work, and now students are not receiving their allowances. These allowances, Chairperson, I was telling somebody that these allowances are not a by the way, like some of our leaders in this institution also treat it. These finance allowances from NSFAS goes a long way in a student's life. Some of them even support their parents at home. It's not a joke. It's a serious thing because really no one is working there at home. It's very serious. So these students are not able to study now because they're hungry. No one, even their uncles, probably are not sending them money to study. And at the end of the year, we expect the students, when we have not given them allowances for 2 months. So when we don't give these students money, we must assume that they are not eating because we have not given them this thing. So it means for 2 months, these students have not eaten. What are we expecting? Are we expecting these kids to die of hunger or what? What is it that we're expecting? So what I was expecting from VUT on this case, they were supposed to say, put further columns on this thing and say, first one, fine, you only updated this thing on the 21st of July. The second one, persons responsible, the resolution on the persons responsible for this mess, because it's a mess. And then turnaround time for this thing. Because if you don't have those things, it means in January next year, we'll still be dealing with the same problem. Going to the next one, they're saying some students did not sign contracts. What did the university do? I mean, for me, if I see somebody has not signed a contract in February, February will not end before I get this person. At the time, the student representatives, SRC, they could have said in one of the meetings, MENCOM, SRC, these are your people, your students have not signed, take this list, go get them, let them come and fast. So in October, we are saying we are canceling a contract of these kids, of these students, because they did not sign contract. That isn't, for me, leadership. I don't think they were showing leadership there. We are creating problems for ourselves. On the issue of laptops, I think Chaperson, you covered me on this thing, and I think some the student represents, former student representatives said this thing. So, as we have received those anonymous emails, Chaperson, the person alleged that a tender was issued, which I went and checked. Indeed, it was. I think they wanted 6,000 laptops. In the tender specific cases, the one that the administrator said no one met the requirements, and I'm interested to see which requirements were not met, because if we are again, Chaperson, and this is if we don't attend to these things clearly, we are going to have a problem, because somebody can just tomorrow just release a communique says no, this one is. This tender is cancelled because no one met the requirement. But what exactly are these requirements that these people did not meet? So it means maybe with the department, Chaperson, we must have a one-on-one with them and say, if there is such a thing, this is the reporting format that must come to the department. One, if you are saying no one met the requirement, you must write all of, you must do a report that says, Teboho, trading and what met only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 requirements and did not meet the seventh one. And we make these things public so that Teboho trading and what can come and say, no, but that is not true. This is what we have submitted. Because if we don't do that, we are opening a window for corruption. If I am in charge of SCM, and that, like the anonymous email we got, alleged, says, those who were preferred were beaten on one score or the other, and that is why the contract will be cancelled. If we don't do that, Chaperson, we are going to open a window for serious looting and corruption of this state, this university coffers. And therefore, I'm proposing that in our one-on-one with the department, that's supposed to be tomorrow, we then meet and tell, let's have a reporting format for this thing. If there is any tender for all institutions in our portfolio thing, this is what we must do. We will do so, Chaperson. It's a tedious process, but I can guarantee you now, it will save us embarrassment in the future. Of anonymous emails, people being threatened, and all of those things. So I'm proposing that we do that. But on this one, I'm interested to see which specifications, as the administrator is saying, were not met. Because I want to compare them with the anonymous emails. And I know we must not really give airtime to anonymous people, but sometimes when they are raising issues, we ought to listen. Lastly, on the laptops again, there was the administrator says they purchased 7,000 on RFQs, request for quotation. Did we follow MSMA, PSMA? Sorry?
Based on quotations.
Yeah, on quotations.
Yeah.
Did we get, did we follow PSMA there? Will Auditor General not come and say, you on quotations, you can only go to 10 million or 5 million, but you went over 30 million or 38 million as somebody was alleging? Did we follow there? Did we do the right thing? Because allegations on that, Chaperson, again, is that because the companies we did not want, or companies we wanted to get this thing did not meet the requirements, or were beaten on pricing and all of that by somebody else, We then went, cancelled this thing and bought those things outside of PFMA rules. On COVID residences, allegations that a person is that some female residences who went in there, I think at level 4, level 3, whatever, they were getting infections because of unhygienic conditions of these residences. Is that true? Can you get a response on that? On e-learning, students again allege that some have not even, you know, this thing that we speak about, they only hear about on TV and radio, that students will receive data and all of that at VUT, that doesn't exist. Is that true? Have you given those who are supposed to be learning online, have you given them data so that they so that they are able to follow? on the interim SRC, the term expired 6 months ago, Chairperson. 6 months in April. It's October now. Still nothing. There's no interim SRC. The biggest stakeholders in the university community are not represented in the university decision-making. And this is not the first institution we are dealing with that does these things, Chairperson. In the previous quarter, or the first quarter of this year, we met a lot of universities, a lot of TVET colleges, and this is a trend. This is what happens when university leadership, council, management, do not want to be irritated by students. This is what they do. They drag their feet. Can we get answers? Why has this not happened? Because this thing from the administrator saying, no, we're dealing with getting the academic records and all of those things. Those things can be, unless the university says they're not in charge of their own system. Getting an academic record of Tebogo takes less than a day, less than 10 minutes. 10 minutes, it's now 6 months. So you want to tell me in March next year we'll still be here. So no, they submitted somebody, we had to vet, and then after 3 months, we realize the person did not meet the academic requirements to be in the SRC. So can we really get a reason why is this thing taking so long? The students are the biggest, the largest stakeholders in the university community. On the issue of security, I want to join how I think and the students that they are shocked. They say they are shocked that they are hearing today. The last line of the administrator's report presentation says security is now appointed. When was this done? Because we have learned that that is not the case. Appointed when? If indeed they are appointed, I'm sure it's not because you know they are appointed. You can just say we appointed the Boko security on Tuesday for a period of this law. Can the administrator just tell us when did they appoint this security and what is this security? Because the university community there, they don't know that the security is appointed. I can tell you that much. Paying of the second last point, Chairperson, the paying of contractors. We have received a complaint, Chairperson, from one LNS or LSN trading. I think I wrote LSN here on my notes. That alleged that the institution owes them millions, and they are a small company having used their funds to do some renovation, some rest. I don't know the full details really of that thing, Chairperson. I know the administrator is aware. This person alleged that the quantity surveyor of the institution acknowledged that they do owe them. They also alleged that Mencom might acknowledge that they owe them, but these people are not paid. A small company, surviving, trying to make ends meet, are not paid anything even after the submitted, including the university's quantity survey. So can you get the response there, a formal response on this thing, and can you be specific, because this thing of responding generally is not assisting any of us. On the assessor's report, Chairperson, it had made a number of recommendations. Some of them were that a lifestyle audit be done on senior management. How far is this? I missed it on the presentation by the administrator. How far are we with the implementation of those recommendations by the assessor? I see the administrators in the report that they are phasing out this one, they're streamlining this position and all of those things, level 1 to level 4, how I think was saying. But are this, when the administrator came in, did he do his own new thing, or he took the assessor's report and worked from the assessor's report? I just need to, and lastly, I think comment the workers there, very, very clear presentations from both Nehao and Deu, and their job, of course, is to, look after the interest of the employees, but also to look after the institution. If the institution will collapse tomorrow, these workers will not have jobs tomorrow. So they have a responsibility to make sure that that institution, the VUT, remains intact. They don't keep quiet when they see wrong things. They don't join factions of this one or that one in management, because if you do that, you run the risk of helping run the institution to the ground. So I just wanted to say to the workers that you have a responsibility to save that institution. They now made recommendations or asked for assistance, Chairperson. I think we should really consider them, that VUT remains classified as a rural institution where the people are paid less compared to others. So it means the institution will struggle to attract the best workers. Once they want somebody, because of how much they pay, those people will opt to go somewhere where they will be paid more. So that, for me, that is extremely important. Maybe let's consider assisting them on that queue. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Kacha.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you to all the participants who have made their presentations to us. Oh, I'd also like to welcome Dr. Tim Maguire to the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Ipsiyesep to the Study Group. I don't know, maybe is Honorable Tim Maguire, Dr. Tim Maguire crossing the floor as well or what? But I think you need to welcome her to the Portfolio Committee and not the Study Group. Thank you so much, Chair. Chair, when an institution is put under administration, you ideally want the process of administration to bring the institution into greener pastures, where what we seek to do with the higher education and training sector in terms of providing skills and knowledge to ensure that our people can actively participate in the economy, and we fail to, the institution has been under administration a number of times and we keep on failing. And, when you hear of the allegations being made upon the administrator, and of course, we're not judges and, we're not here to say whether or not the allegations are true or false, but you do not want to come across the type of allegations that are made, towards the administrator in a time of administration, because ultimately you can't have an administration of an administration process, So and ideally when it comes to institutions like Vaal University of Technology, which do cater for by and large the proletariat of our country, you do want these institutions to get to a point where they're fully functional. So, you know, Chair, like I'm really concerned that we have the same type of concerns and allegations that are being raised under administration as those that were being raised, you know, prior to the moment that took or placed the institution under administration. So that's just a general concern that I have. And Chair, I can't begin to stress the importance of repercussions and consequences being placed upon those that have contributed to the decay of the institution. And, you know, I've seen the presentation being made by the administrator, and they highlight, you know, from time to time where the consequence has been placed upon those who have contributed to, for example, the inability for the institution to develop in terms of its infrastructure. But, you know, one must continue to stress that we must be even able to account and say, you know, these are the people, and also not be biased in how consequences is executed or implemented. If there's five people who are responsible for, you know, or 10 or 20 people who are responsible for and attributed to the decay in the institution, in whatever division of the institution, then all of them must be dealt with, and there must be no bias towards that. Chair, I must also raise concern with regards to the allegation around sex for positions, or, you know, that sort of trade that has got to do with sexual interaction, particularly in light of the fact that the president has stated that gender-based violence and femicide is, you know, a pandemic in the country. And institutions of higher learning are microcosms and social institutions of the country that are meant to be spaces where we eradicate, you know, social ills such as gender-based violence and femicide. So that's of great concern, Chair. And of course, we know that these are allegations. And Chair, ultimately, you know, the nature of the portfolio committee is to ensure that various policies and commitments of institutions of the state in various sectors, well, ours being higher education, are followed through. So we don't seek to come here and say, you know, right or wrong, but to say people must follow through what policy says. And that must be the line of march. And then, Chair, also, you know, one must always look at the higher education and training sector, or the PSET sector, as an ecosystem, right? So if we fail at a particular institution, we fail the system at large. So we don't want a situation where we are rotating, recycling, reusing individuals or collectives that have ultimately contributed to the decay of the sector by contributing to maladministration or malfunction in one institution. We don't want them now to appear elsewhere, right? And that is why we're trying to work on ensuring that we have that we inquire on the appointment of Professor Mbati at Sefako-Mokgatle University, because we don't want a rotation or recycling of individuals that have attributed to the decay of the system. Chair, I think, you know, one must also emphasize that communication is so pivotal, right? And we must commend the fact that when we had gone there in February as a portfolio committee, we advised that there be multi-stakeholder sessions or for engagement, because what we sensed at that particular time was that there was no platform for people to voice out their concerns in the institution. And one would then assume that the Indigo is then put in place to allow for that. But noting what, you know, students have shared with us prior to this meeting, what's important is that these Indigos and whatever commitments or concessions are made from the Indigo are executed and implemented. Because ultimately then the Indigos will become fruitless exercise where people just gather to vent and it becomes what, you know, others may refer to as a talk shop. Chair, like you've said, and the Honourable Ifeah have also said, we've received a plethora of emails from students. And, you know, the manner in which these emails have been coming through, as a former student activist, I think Mr. Carlson, if he's still in the meeting, when you were chair of the council at this university, we also did something similar to the Dean of Students. I don't know if actually you were chair at that point or after that. And we flooded the Dean of Students' email mailbox as a form of protest with concerns, you know, from various students. But in light of COVID, in light of the fact that students don't have student representation at this current time, it only makes sense that having the amount of students that have written to the portfolio committee is an assigned a formal protest action, right? Because students need to have their voices heard. And the nature of the complaints, Chair, you know, when you look at what Ms. Matisa said, and I'm mentioning her name because sometimes when we come here and we say we've received complaints from students, it is not we're speaking about faceless and nameless people. It is not we're speaking about people who are not possibly the first in their family to get a qualification, who are going to better the livelihood of the individuals. We're speaking about human beings when we come here and we say students have various concerns. And she says that, you know, she was funded and now she's receiving various legal threats from the institution to say she must pay for her fees. But as far as she knows, and you know, record has it that she was funded by NAFIS. You know, the likes of Mr. Apane, Ms. Makrina, Ms. Makate, Ms. Makubela, Ngwenya, Teko, Muhale, Mashile, Innocentia, Makoma, Sikuto, Bulufo, Omonde, Malope, Mukwena M. And a collective of students who have named themselves concerned Vaal University of Technology students, right? They're all complaining about the issue around their allowances being, I'm going to try and wrap up, Chair, their allowances being halted and their funding being withdrawn because of a lack of a competence from the institution to ensure that whatever registration documents, whatever results, that are meant to be sent to head office are sent to head office. And I don't understand personally, Chair, and I'd like clarity on this. Why is our system unable to, once the student becomes a returning student, why are our system unable to automatically update the NAFIS headquarters? Why is there no a seamless sort of communication between the institution and NAFIS nationally, so at the end of the year, all the NAFIS recipients, their results must automatically just go through to NAFIS. I don't understand why our system currently fails to do that, because then I don't think we'd be in the situation in which we're in. Chair, we've also received, very, very saddening and concerning mail that speaks to a culture that of dismissiveness from the administration. These are allegations, of course. These are definitely, everyone is entitled to express themselves in the manner in which they express themselves, and we as public representatives, our responsibility is to ensure that we escalate these issues to a platform where these issues could be resolved. And there's allegations that say that when students reach out to the office of the administrator, you know, they're told that, well, I can't help you with that. Go to the office and don't come back to my office again. And we need to nip that culture. If that is the case, we need to nip that culture of dismissiveness in the bud, because ultimately the reason why we have the unrest that we have in institutions of higher learning is because we don't allow for engagement to take place in a fruitful manner, Chair. So that's very concerning. And, you know, noting the naughty and precarious manner of NAFIS and the administration that comes with the Chair, we need to have thorough, accurate, and consistent communication with students. So students need to understand why they are funding. When we look at the emails that have been sent to us by students, Chair, there's inconsistency in why they say their funds have been withdrawn. The dates are differing. This is a lot that doesn't, you know, there's no correlation between what they also say NAFIS is saying, well, NAFIS headquarters is saying, and the financial aid office on their campus is saying. And that disjuncture in terms of communication, Chair, is very problematic. And in all of the tips, to reiterate your sentiment that in all of this miscommunication and inability for our administration as the financial aid office on campus and national, students cannot be the casualties of our inability to roll out our administration accurately, right? Now on slide 3, Chair, of the NAFIS presentation, it says 79 student academic results were not received. And I guess this goes to the fact that why were those results were automatically sent to NAFIS headquarters. And we note all the other reasons, Chair, as well. And in noting all the other reasons of rejection, Chair, What's most important is that when students find themselves in a position where they are not, they cannot be funded by NAFRIC, the biggest challenge here is that they're finding this out when they were previously told that they are going to be funded by NAFRIC. So it would be mid-year or towards the end of the year. And this places students in a highly vulnerable and a state and in a state of anxiety chair, which deals with the issue around mental health, which is an issue that this country has taken very seriously. So we can't have students come to the offices on campus and say, oh, sorry, you know, well, that's your reality, and so we can't help you. We need to make sure between the institution, the department, and NAFSA that we have mechanisms in place for us to try and find ways to support these learners, because ultimately, the sector is not here to make people fail. You know, academically and financially, that's not what we're here for. We're here to ensure that students finish their academic career successfully. I share the same sentiments as Honourable Isaiah to say, why has DET not submitted the claims? And I guess they've submitted their claims late. The 284 students that were funded but not recommended by the institution, I'd like clarity as to what that actually means. In terms of the NCAS 2 students, the 837 students who appealed, that's very satisfying to hear that 847 students appealed in terms of NCAS 2 and were approved. But my biggest concern is that we need to make sure that, as you've mentioned, Chair, we don't miss anyone out, like in the case that you've had with the one student from UNISA. Because, Chair, till this morning, I think you might also have been CC'd on this matter. There are still various concerns and emails that are coming through from students, Chair. With regards to the initiative report, we would have really appreciated like images on the progress of residences, because there are students who are still today saying that the residences are not in good condition. So with the institution saying that there's been progress with regards to residences, we would like, and noting what Honourable Lucia said about students getting infections, we'd like to, you know, we need proof of that, and perhaps, Chair, we need to go and do another oversight, and maybe, you know, those members who stay in Harbin can be sent by you to go do oversight at the institution to see this progress on those residences. And then how far are the conversations with Fort Blighty University and the University of Mpumalanga with regard to them hosting those who would have been in the satellite campuses that are now being closed? Can we be privy, Chair, as the portfolio committee, to the guidelines on the establishment of the interim SRC? But I then want to just sort of contradict myself and say I concur with the former Secretary General of the SRC to say that in fact there's no need for an interim SRC anymore, because we have now reached level one of the lockdown. And when you look at other institutions like Brits University and the University of Cape Town, they have continued with SRC elections, virtually, which in itself also has its own concerns. But, Chair, ultimately, we are at a point as a country where we could find an alternative way of ensuring that students are represented, as opposed to having, are democratically and fairly represented, as opposed to having an interim structure. I apologize sincerely, Chair, for taking a very long time to articulate myself. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Honourable Kacha. Honourable Dr. Tembe Kwayo, you have made an input into the portfolio committee. Welcome again.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the welcome, and the welcome by other members of the committee on health, higher education, and science and technology. Sorry for that. I just want to start by, you know, applauding the process that the chairperson you are following on involving all stakeholders involved in the VUT matters so as to get clarity of matters of importance and concern, especially the how and do, but most importantly, the voice of our students, because without the voice of our students or without the existence of students, the institutions will cease to exist. Before I ask my questions, I just want to say to the administrator in VUT to say whistleblowing is here to stay, because there are always truths in the whistleblower statements, as long as there is no biasness that is used upon investigation of reported matters. And then secondly, to say to the administrator, there's lack of communication, especially when you don't involve other stakeholders. That's why at this present moment, your executives are busy closing satellite campus, are busy closing cafeterias, are busy dissolving SRTs, and are busy on suspension of the poor students, including the victimization of the students. And to NASFAS, I just want to say, I concur with the chairperson that you should take a different new approach. It's time for you to involve yourself into paradigm shift. Just think differently once and for all, because the outcry about NASFAS cut across all institutions. It's not only the problem experienced by VUT, but it cuts across all institutions. So it means the problem does not lie with the students. It lies with this NASFAS, because you are unreachable. So improve your level of communication. Question number one to the administrator. You had previous policies that existed that guided your governance of the institution prior to the institution being brought under maladministration. The policies were reviewed, yes, of course, but policies are written documents of the institutions. My question is, when do you plan to revisit and review to check whether this new policy that you have done are adhered to? Because they are written documents, it's a matter of implementing what is on written. So if it's not implemented, then in the next 5 years, we will also have the same process taking place of bringing the institution under administration. Question number two deals with the disciplinary actions that have been initiated, which are underway against the members of staff implicated in fraud and corruption by forensic investigations. But you also said this process is a slow process with ongoing postponements. My question is why? Why do you allow it to be a slow process? Why is there a lot of postponements? And secondly, I tend to agree with Mateo's presentation, where they said that according to the report sent to them, there is no accountability for the people who were implicated in the forensic report, those who have resigned. Is the same thing going to happen to those disciplinary actions which are in process, administrator? That's my question. I just would like to know. Please keep us informed on this type of the results after this process, so that we can be able to check whether the disciplinary actions which are supposed to be meted upon individuals are enough for them. And secondly, I just want to ask on the administrator said about achievement of good academic results. My question is, what is according to you those students that have achieved good academic results in correlation with the NASFAS students with my outstanding migration problems from 2019 to 2020? And I'm still on the closing of the satellite campuses. And just to ask you something today, while you are busy with the negotiations and while you are busy with the closing of satellite campuses, that is not in actual fact accepted by the communities living near those campuses. Please, are you making sure that the students that will be accommodated in those universities that you have mentioned, are you going to make sure that they get full exemptions of their courses that they acquired from those satellite campuses towards the completion of their own degrees? And secondly, administrator, how do you feel when you are going to lose a heavy staff because of the closing of the satellite campuses? How do you feel about that? Or do you have a contingency plan to accommodate them somewhere? The other question is based on security tender, but I'm going to ask you differently because it has been exhausted so far, to say, why can't you insource the security so that they can be paid well, so that they mustn't be a middleman? I mean, a middleman will say to you, I'm paying my security personnel 7,500, but I'm telling you, they will get only 1,700 out of the agreed upon 7,500. So if you do the insourcing, then obviously they will also be exposed to the benefits of the institution, as with all the staff that are employed in your institution. So the question is, why can't you insource the security? And I'm also going to ask you differently from the others about the laptops. You said the staff and the students received the staff is 500 and the student is 7,000. On the contrary, the student said they are asked to pay for the laptops. Who is who? Who is telling the truth? Are they not supposed to be given to the students for free? Were they told that they were supposed to pay back those money? And I think if they were told to buy them, they would not have accepted that offer because they could have got them somewhere from the Chinese shops cheaper than what you charge them. So I think I have exhausted my questions. Thank you very much, and thank you for accommodating me.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Tembe Kwayo, for your meeting input in the committee. Thank you. We will get Honorable Mananiso and then followed by Honorable Sibiya in that order.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me firstly start by welcoming all the presentations that we got today. However, one must start by commenting that to the administrator, that he must note that portfolio committee meetings is not about what we want to hear as members of parliament, but what needs to be done by themselves as leadership and management in the institutions. And the other thing is the fact that with what he has presented us with, it is a two-feet story that very false. I would go straight to the report by Nteu to just need clarity, Chairperson, because of on their presentation, they are speaking about unnecessary expenditure. What kind of the things that they are speaking about? I mean, when you deal with institutions, it's not like you are dealing with your household issues, where you can just buy even if you didn't budget for. So I just need some clarity in terms of why is the administrator and their management buying and spending what they don't have? What is it that they can just give us an example in terms of what is it that they buy when they do those unnecessary expenditure? And the other thing is with regards to health. I was very confused by the presentation. The presentation, it was just it's popcorn on the microwave. The other ones become sweet, and the other ones very, very sour and hard as well as it, when they go with their presentation. I want to check if they really have a relationship with the administrator. Have they tried to exhaust these issues that they are bringing forth to us as a portfolio committee? And if so, what could have been the result of them engaging the administrator in terms of things that they believe that he must be rectified by the institution? I want to check, and they must tell us if whatever that they have done as attempts, have they worked or not. And I think one of the things that I'm noting in everybody who did their presentation is the fact that in DUT, there's lack of proper communication. There's lack of good stakeholders' relations with them because of everybody who presents it as if they are looking at themselves as people who are supposed to be giving student support. As Honorable Lydia said, I mean, people who should be worried about all of us as the PC and as well as those who are in charge of the institution, it's students. But yet here, we find ourselves speaking as students as victims of this particular system. So I want to really emphasize on the issue of them dealing with how they relate with each other as stakeholders and as well how they communicate with each other. The other thing, Chairperson, that I've noted is this issue of the administrator when he was doing his presentation. He was emphasizing on the issue of mafia style. And one wants to believe that how they are dealing with students is mafia style. The issue of oppression or oppressing other people, the issue of victimization, the issue of making sure that people's voice are not being heard. It must be aside. They must stop doing that because of everything that they do, they're doing it on behalf of us as public representatives. So we can't be saying that access to learning, people must reach these institutions of higher learning. The next thing when you go there is wrestling, and people, they just want to showcase how powerful they are when they are within this particular system. And on other issues of NSFAS, Honorable Chairperson, has been covered by Honorable Lizzie and Honorable Mkhat. Lastly, Chair, I would want to as well echo the very same sentiment that Honorable Doctor from BFF to say that, I mean, the issue of whistling blowing must be taken seriously. And if you are operating an organization as supposed to, you can't be having people writing a moria of letters to everybody because of you'll be having an institution that has an open policy that speaks to issues of the institution as when they arrive. So it really shows that they have a weakness in terms of ensuring that in the institution, Chairperson, there's a space for those who want to speak as it went there is wrong. We've been emphasizing as the portfolio committee that we want all these institutions to have a war room. War room in a sense that people would report as it went things are happening, not wait for 1 year, 3 years, and so on. So I think sometimes when we speak, people think that we come here after maybe drinking some other things and we cannot record whatever that you are saying. I'm saying this thing for the last time. DUT, it has a serious problem. They must have a room that will speak 365 days on issues of students, not their issues. Prioritize issues. Issues are student issues. Lastly, Chairperson, is with regards to the report from the about the investigation. There are recommendations that the institution must apply the lifestyle audit. I want to check with the administrator how far is the institution in terms of ensuring that they have a policy in place that will speak with lifestyle audit. And I want to ask him if he is committed that even if he was to leave the institution, at least that particular institution will be having this particular lifestyle audit, that it prevents this new normal of corruption. Because of now the corruption issue is new normal. Everybody must do it, even if it's unnecessary. So I want to check, how is he committed to ensure that when he leaves that particular state, there would be any lifestyle audit and the policy at play to prevent all this from saying future person?
Thank you, Honorable Sylvia.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for all the presentations. And we would like to also to welcome Honorable Doctor, who has joined us to our portfolio committee. Chairperson, there are questions from the unions, and they are complaining about lack of communications. On top of that, they are saying there is no stability on HR. And on top of that, the administrator have said only one executive manager remains from the old main has left from the main committee. And he is saying by agreement will exist the institution by agreement. I'm not clear on that one. By agreement that he will, or he is, or she, I don't know, will exist the institution. Are they pushing them to leave the institution, or it is because of the contract? And the SRC also said that sometimes they were not allowed to participate in the meetings. Why? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sia. Honorable Boshoff. Honorable Dr. Boshoff. So we've got two doctors in the house in our portfolio committee.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I also want to add my welcoming words to the Honorable Dr. Tembe Kwayo. I must say I like the predecessor in the committee. We were, if I may say so, quite good friends. And what was especially nice about him is that if we shared the desk, I could have half of the desk, not a quarter or so. So that was very nice. And then I also realized when I did some research on the Honorable Dr. Tembe Kwayo that we did our PhDs at the same promoter at the University of Pretoria. So that's very interesting. That was interesting to me. But my questions I want to limit to two things. The one is about the Upington campus of the VUT, which is to be closed. I want to know if more stakeholders are involved in this process, because I think that there are other stakeholders in the province, and I've mentioned that before, that the Upington campus of the VUT should play a pivotal role in enabling students from the Northern Cape to benefit by the jobs created by the SKA. So I would like to know who are all the participators in that those discussions. And the other thing I want to ask, actually to NSFAS, and it's about the N+2, that we have a student who inquired. She missed the 1 year because the university wrongly thought that she had not had NSFAS funding previously in her studies. And then they realized that she had, but then she could only enroll for the second semester. And now she is at N+2, a part N+2, so she lost her funding. But in fact, if all communication has been according to reality, she would not be at N+2, and she wants to complete the studies by the end of this year. It seems to me that appeal was not successful, and I just want to have some direction about exactly what are the criteria and where do I find it if I want to read it myself. Thank you, Honorable Chair and fellow members.
Very much, Honorable Dr. Borshoff. So you and Honorable Tembekwayo did the same PhD, or did a PhD, all of you at Pekis.
That's right, Professor William Fraser was a common promoter.
Oh, okay. So you are colleagues, you are rejoining at this level of the portfolio committee. That's good. Okay, thank you very much, honorable members, for engaging. We will allow the university, the administrator and the team, is for the team, to respond to the questions that have been raised. Some of them requires a lot of detail, so those ones we will direct as to what must happen going forward. For instance, questions that require statistics and so forth, we may not have those, so we will develop a way forward, probably have another session where all of the questions will be responded to, those that you are not able to respond to them now. I really, as I said, would have been interested to get the details of the issues that gets brought to our attention, and just to make a further example, Professor Ransbeck, the whistleblower says there are two advisors who were appointed and they had issues before, Mr. Andile, Mungobo, as well as Dr. Prince. It says Mr. Andile used to be employed by Services Vita and there were issues there. And your response is that there was due diligence which was conducted before they were appointed and ultimately ratified by the minister. But the due diligence is not mentioned, what due diligence entailed. Is it true, is it not true, what has been raised with us? So that you give us some level of comfort. Because when it's just a blanket denial, you leave us with a bit of doubt. But when you deal with the details, you say, this is the kind of due diligence that we engage, this is what we found, and after that, this is how we proceeded with the matter. It gives us some bit of comfort so that we also say that, look, these matters have been brought to our attention. We put them to the administrator together with the team. This is how they responded, and we are quite satisfied with the responses. So we have got the level of comfort where we can even go out and say, look, this thing that has been raised, there is no merit in this thing that has been raised. I will tell you that my little experience in this community has told me that I must not dismiss things at face value. Because often when things get substantiated, you get to have an echo on your face. That why was I dismissing these things? And information is beginning to pile up about things that you really say, no, there's nothing in there. So give us that level of comfort. Give us the detail in the follow-up engagement so that us and yourself can be on the same page. Now the other thing, maybe, I think you must just commend yourself for the effort that you have put in bringing some stability. I think the unions do say that the situation is stable now. The
as opposed to how it was in the past, the only care offered, and I think we must commend you for that. What I would be interested in is to what extent are we dealing with the basis for the administration. Now, the basis for the administration is the report of the assessor. That report made recommendations. How far are we in implementing those recommendations? There is a recommendation of the SMG forensic report, which we must implement. Of course, the whistleblower here says that you are not implementing that. That's why I'm saying, give us the details that will demonstrate that you are on course, this is what you are doing against your mandate. I'm interested to find out to what extent are we implementing that SMG report, to what extent are we implementing the assessor's report. One of the key issues that the assessor has raised is the need to review the institutional statutes. And I see only a matrix of things that were done. It is still amber. I think it's amber or red. And for me, that is very key. Review the institutional statute, put together the governance structures. There is no institutional forum, and we have not received an explanation why there is no institutional forum. There is no institutional forum, there is no council, there is nothing, there are no governance structures. And you will understand that governance structures helps in an institution like a university, because it provides checks and balances. Because as it is, now the administrator has got unfettered powers. The administrator can do anything, except the quarterly report that the administrator is sending to to the minister. Basically, the administrator is the be-all and end-all, because he's the vice-chancellor, he's also a council. And there are no governance structures, there is no SRC, there is nothing that can keep the administrator in check. And that's why one of the things that has been raised is the issue of the institutional statute. And I myself am not happy that we have not registered progress in as far as that is concerned. The second issue raised by the assessor is the stakeholder forum. Because it recognized that there is a need for convergence of all the stakeholders to raise their issues there, to come up with ideas as to how the university can be better managed, better governed going forward. That still does not exist. It's not been done. Then there is a lifestyle audit, and then the regular declaration of interest that was raised by the assessor. The matrix here says it has been done, but we have not been given the details as to how it has been done, whether all the executives have submitted, at what intervals are they supposed to submit, has there ever been a lifestyle audit, when was it done, what is the outcome of the lifestyle audit. We don't get to have that detail, and yet it's something that is central. Is the basis for which this administration was involved. So I don't get to have that. The DC, for instance, the DC cases, the assessor says, no, there must be disciplinary cases against certain people. I think you mentioned a couple of them who are at the senior level, but I'm not sure whether it is all the individuals identified by the assessor, the team of assessors, to be taken through the DC. So for me, what will be more important is to get a progress report in as far as the implementation of the assessor's report, implementation of the NSG report, how far are we, because those are the basis for which this administration has been put in place. So that's why I'm of the view that we require a follow-up where we'll get all the details. But
But colleagues have raised the issues, and I think that that there is a need for those issues to be responded now, which we are going to take about up to an hour to afford the administrator to do that. But the one last point that I was looking at as I was listening to the presentation, there are two tenders that have been mentioned here. Excuse me. There's a security tender, there's a laptop tender. The security tender went out. It was cancelled because the DVC for resources and planning alerted Nemco that there seem to be some issues. The bid document was confiscated. As a result, it was cancelled. And then it was restarted again. And then again, there was no preferred bidder, and then it was done again. Ultimately, there was a person appointed through that open tender process. I assume it was through the open tender process. The laptop tender, something different happened. The tender went out for I think about 7,000 students and 500 staff members. Out of that process, a successful bidder was never identified. Everybody could not meet the requirements, and so it was then cancelled on that basis. But instead of being re-advertised again, a different process then was then followed of a quotation. And the justification here is that because there was a need for the procurement of those laptops. So when you look at the security one was treated differently, the laptops one, it was abandoned, and then we went through the quotation system where codes were then obtained. Why would the university treat two procurement processes differently? Why is there no consistency in how the procurement process are treated? Why can't they be consistent? If you go through the tender process, nobody qualifies, why can't you do it again? So that you can then probably somebody will be responsive at the second try. But then the allegations here that there's about 20 million that was spent without following procurement process in procuring these laptops, and it's also alleged that your acting DVC personally was involved in the procurement, in the sourcing of a quotation, when it was said that the quotations are going to be sourced by the SCM unit. So when you come back again, I think just give us comfort on these issues. And as Honorable Lipia said, whether is the quotation system in line with the supply chain policy, in particular the PFMA. So those are some of the issues from my side. I think we will allow the administrator to comment, and then
we will then close. But just on the issue of SRC elections, I think there is a developing consensus view that there is really no need to put up an interim structure for a longer period, where we can then just prepare for the elections, for the SRC, for the democratic elections. And even the explanation about the delay is really something that the members are not happy with. But otherwise, administrator is... the one last thing. Two. Is the appointment of the ombudsman, which was recommended in the assessor's report, which we have not spoken about, which is a matter that when you come back, you must report to us about. And then the committee visited the university in January or February, I think, early this year. And the committee raised issues around the abandoned infrastructure project. And the committee recommended that there must be they must be revived. We need to get some full accountability as to what happened in each of those projects. Why were they abandoned? What happened? A full account of what has happened in each of those projects and the cost of it. And it's something that is not coming up now, which I would request that when we have a follow-up engagement, please also report on that. And then on this policy of NSFAS or of the department, I'm told it's not NSFAS per se. There's a policy issue of the department, and I think that we have to engage with the department. That is just not acceptable. You cannot have the same students treated differently in a system depending on when they join the system. So you want to the other one must be disadvantaged, be treated on 122K simply because they joined before the policy position was announced. I mean, that's just absurd. It's not acceptable. I don't know what the intention is, but if the intention is to save money, I don't think that is correct. All the students who are in the system must be treated the same. The means test must be the same. The qualifying criteria must be the same. So we will engage with the department in as far as that is concerned. Otherwise, over to you, Prof. Francis.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much to members for the